All right, this is Gary Parrish again from CBS Sports, and this is the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. I got Matt Norlander with me, I got Sam Bassini with me. It's Sunday, it's February 7th, it's Super Bowl Sunday. We're recording this in the afternoon because Super Bowl parties sometimes get out of hand and there's no sense in chancing it. So it's Sunday afternoon and Iowa just won at Illinois. So now the Hawkeyes are 19-4 overall, 10-1 in the Big Ten, and number one in the CBS Sports Top 25 and one. Sam Bassini, did you ever think you'd see the day when Iowa was ranked number one in anything?
I'm just worried about what I have to tell my kids about a ranked Iowa or a number one overall Iowa.
How about that? Once Oklahoma lost, or once I even knew that Oklahoma might lose, I started looking at it Saturday night. And You start lining up the resumes, and you can really, you know, you can slice it however you want to make it look favorable for Iowa or Villanova or even Oklahoma. I think you could reasonably rank any of those three teams number one right now based on resumes. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, when I started looking at Iowa's resume, I just sort of I was like, that's the best one, I think, or at least it's the, you know, it's the best one in these ways. They've got more top 25 RPI wins than the other teams that I was considering. They've got at least as many top 50 RPI wins as anybody else I was seriously considering. They've got no losses outside of the top 30. They got no home losses. They haven't been blown out by anybody. Like, it's a, I don't look at Iowa and think of them as a traditional number one team in the country, but, you know, based on the resumes of February 7th, they make as much sense as anybody, I think.
Did you consider Maryland?
Yes, but the issue from and again, like, you could just point to Maryland and say, "Hey, the schedule. What are you going to do?"
Sure,
they've only got true road losses and they're all close, but they don't have the wins that some of these other schools have.
Well, the reason I brought up Maryland particularly is because they have the win over Iowa,
right?
So that's like, it's kind of an interesting little thing, but I would say that Iowa's resume probably trumps what Maryland has on its resume, even including the Iowa win.
It does. I mean, I can tell you it does. But the argument for Maryland, and it's weird to make this argument about a Big Ten team, is typically the type of argument you might need to make for Wichita State or Gonzaga. You'd have to say, hey, listen, they don't have as many wins as a Villanova or an Iowa or an Oklahoma, but that's their schedule. There's nothing they can do about their schedule. And that would be the way to argue in favor of Maryland. I think at this moment, they only have two top 50 RPI wins. And, you know, like, again, Iowa's got six, Villanova's got six, Oklahoma's got five. But, you know, some of that's just because they've played way fewer top 50 teams. For whatever reason, their schedule just has been what it is. Norlander, you got an opinion on who should be ranked number one when the AP poll comes out tomorrow?
Don't really care too much who it is. I think your Iowa choice is inspired just because we know it's not going to be Iowa. So I like the fact that the conversation is extended at least this far out. And if we fielded, the dance right now with all 68 teams, Iowa definitely would be a one seed.
Right.
I also think we're going to be heading to a situation here where, I mean, okay, so the teams that you would consider right now, Iowa, 19-4, Oklahoma, 19-3, but really with the loss of K-State, I would say in the moment, you know, and I definitely am all for it, let's not necessarily react to losses, meaning you shouldn't be number one, but that's two straight weeks. That would, you know, I would say there's, given what else is around Oklahoma, I think it's reasonable to drop them from the top spot because they will have two consecutive weeks with losses at the number one spot, whereas other teams challenging did not. Virginia is 19-4 and has a resume that's evolving in a very nice way. And I think about what we talked about with Virginia like 3 weeks ago. Tony Bennett's certainly done a good job in kind of making them rebound. Nova 20-3. Nova and Maryland, by the way, I believe both. I know Maryland for sure, but I'm pretty sure Villanova has never been the number one ranked team in the AP poll in the regular season. So we could have some history on Monday with that. And then, of course, Maryland and Xavier, by the way. Xavier is the only team of all of these mentioned that only has two losses, and Xavier's got, you know, its scalps aren't as nice overall. I mean, they've beaten Providence, USC, Dayton's a win that keeps looking better. I'm telling you, this is going to be the best Dayton team Archie Miller has had, even if the A-10 isn't that great. Overall, Dayton's still a really good team. I would say because Xavier lacks the ultimate elite wins, you might not consider them to be a the number one right now. But what I'm getting at with all those teams is, and I understand Xavier only has two right now, we're going to have a situation. This isn't exactly breaking news, but my guess is by the time we get to Selection Sunday, the total losses for number one seeds will be as high as maybe ever, or certainly within the past decade and a half, if not longer, because I think it's almost guaranteed we'll have at least two seeds with five losses, two number one seeds with five losses. And most years, you know, the number one overall team and then usually the team that's vying for it right behind it, they've got two, maybe three losses top. So it'll be pretty interesting. If I had to pick the number one ranked team for tomorrow, I think I would go Villanova. But of course, you got the weird thing with, you know, Maryland and Iowa, Maryland having the win over Iowa. Of course, Oklahoma, Villanova. Oklahoma has the romping of Nova right now. Nova is the number one team in KenPom and has six top 50 KenPom wins. No bad losses overall. It's definitely very interesting. And I got to admit, I love this. I love what the season has become. I understand that some people will lament that there's no dominant teams, and I get that. But to me, I just love every season, no matter what it brings us. And the uncertainty, I think, is freaking awesome. I hope that it continues to the point where when we get to the NCAA tournament, like every year, it's like, wow, this could be a crazy tournament. And, you know, it always is. It has really good facets. But I'm telling you, I want a Selection Sunday where you look at the 1, 2, and 3 seeds and you're like, I can't say I don't have a lot of confidence in any of these teams.
You can't trust it. You're not going to be able to trust any of them.
Which to me is fun because honestly, we don't usually get that. Truly, truly, truly get that. There can be certain years where the twos might be a little uninspiring, but even in those, the number ones are usually something that you have good confidence in breaking into the second week and into the Elite Eight. I would love a tournament where it just is a total crapshoot, like unlike anything we've seen before. We're headed toward that. I still have a little bit of skepticism, guys, if we're going to truly get there, because something tells me we might still find just a little bit of order by the time we get to Selection Sunday. But I got to be honest, I'm kind of hoping we don't.
I don't think we're going to. I mean, like yesterday on Saturday, yeah, we had, you know, the number one and number two team in the AP poll both lose to unranked teams. I mean, like, think about the teams last year. Like, Kentucky never lost to an unranked team. I think Duke might have done it once. I'm not sure Wisconsin did it at all. Like, and it just happens all the time now.
Even like Arizona was awesome last year. Like that Arizona team last year would have been the best team in the country this year by far.
Oh, I think
it wouldn't even be close.
Duke last year, Kentucky last year, Arizona last year, Wisconsin last year, Virginia with James Anderson last year.
Yeah. All those teams, and they rate higher in Palmer's algorithm than any of the teams this year. Yeah. Right. So
and to be clear, probably Villanova too.
Yes, yes, without a doubt. Yes.
So, a couple notes on some of the teams you mentioned, Norlander. Xavier, like, you know, one of the things that I think checks the positive box for Iowa is that, you know, they haven't been run off the court. And they have, you know, every team they've lost to is also ranked in my top 25 and 1. Now, I know you could argue, well, that's because you manipulated it to make it that way. And that's not true, but that's the way I would argue against myself. But they don't have any losses outside of the top 25 and 1. And nobody's beating the hell out of them. And that's where you run it. Like, Villanova got their brains beat in by Oklahoma. Xavier got their brains beat in by Villanova. And then with Virginia, they've got 9 top 50 wins. Like, I've had some Virginia fans hit me with the 9 top 50 wins, and that is true. But for whatever reason, when fans are making the cases for their teams, they just ignore the losses. Like, Virginia's got losses to GW, Florida State, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech. All true road games, but, you know, two of those are outside of the top 50. So I guess I would wrap it up by saying this. You could reasonably have, I think, you know, six different teams, five different teams ranked number one. Like, you could make the case. Like, if you told me to write 5 columns explaining why these 5 teams should be ranked number one in the country, like, I could sell you on it. But, you know, after looking at it and just, I promise you, nobody's looked at it as much as I looked at it, because nobody's as dumb as I am to spend this much time on it. I felt like Iowa was the proper call and just as reasonable as anybody else you could possibly put at the top of about.
Can I just toss out, let's just hit the two top teams that lost real quick. One, you know, I kind of almost set it up exactly how it happened with Carolina Notre Dame on the podcast from Friday. just like Bray has a in that his program, they just have a knack for getting really good wins and some good spots. Primetime game, you know, game day was there and all that stuff, and they look good. And they have now beaten a ranked Duke team when Duke was ranked, and now a ranked Carolina team. This doesn't happen in most seasons, but it did actually happen with NC State last year, and of course that made that team made the Sweet 16. So maybe good things coming for the Irish. But GP, you had said that you know you wouldn't necessarily. Your perception of Carolina and its long-term big picture prospects wouldn't be knocked too much. I would agree with you in watching how they played the game. I don't really have too much concern. And part of that's because of the talent. And part of it's obviously what's at the top of the sport. And then with Oklahoma and K-State, that was definitely a weird one. I will give my brother Cody, the youngest, who loves to just suck up to Parrish and Goodman on Twitter. I will give him his props on the podcast. He did text me before that game started that K-State would win, and he asked me, and I said, nah, I'll say Oklahoma by about 12. And he was right, and great call there. Definitely a little bit of a weird one, but I'm not I don't think of anything lesser of Oklahoma because, one, Bramlage is in the within the league. Like, if you talk to Big 12 coaches, Bramlage is considered year in and year out like a top three tough venue to play. Allen Fieldhouse is obviously number one. Hilton's two, and then Bramlage is probably number three. And Oklahoma's had some issues there. They haven't won there, I think, in like five seasons. But overall, like, I just think you're going to look back and it's going to be like, oh, yeah, they got picked off that one time at K-State. I still think Oklahoma at worst will be a number two seed, but are you guys with me in that just because Carolina and Oklahoma lost, like they weren't necessarily exposed to any sort of big degree, like they should be considered top five teams big picture?
How about this? Well, I mean, I don't think Carolina has a top five resume. But I would say this, if you gave me a bracket right now and you put Oklahoma in one region and Carolina in one region, different regions,
yeah,
I'd probably have them both in the Final Four.
Probably would too.
They would both be Final Four picks for me. Now, I still think Oklahoma's got a top two resume, top three resume at worst, and could reasonably – I just wasn't going to do it because, I don't know, I think Iowa's got the better resume right now. Plus, people go crazy if you leave Oklahoma number one again. But plus, it was a double-digit loss to an unranked team. That's a lot different than losing at Hilton. But Oklahoma, like, no, I'm not worried about Oklahoma. I wish they'd stop kicking the ball when they're trying to close out a game in the final minute. That would probably be ideal, but sure. What are you going to do? No, I still think Oklahoma and North Carolina, I thought this yesterday at this time, I thought they were Final Four caliber teams. I still think they're Final Four caliber teams. They're probably teams that I would pick to advance in my bracket of the. So both those teams lost. There were actually four ranked teams yesterday that lost to unranked teams. The other two, of course, were Wichita State and Indiana. Wichita State loses at Illinois State. Indiana loses at Penn State. Sam, which one of those surprised you most? So they both surprised you.
Oh, yeah, they both surprised me. I would say both those teams were among the hotter teams in the country coming into that game. I would probably – man, that's tough. I would probably say Indiana surprised me a little bit more because I don't buy that Penn State team in any real way. Like Illinois State, they at least are kind of a tough matchup. They beat Wichita State last year as well. I think they beat them in the Missouri Valley Tournament.
They did.
Does that sound right?
Yep.
Yes.
So, yeah, like that team, at least, you know, for whatever reason, might have Wichita State's number. The Penn State Indiana one is it's a weird one, I would say. I mean, Indiana is now sitting there at 9-2 in the Big Ten. And that was a chance for them to go to 10-1 and be three games up on a top three spot in the entire league. I mean, if they're sitting there at 10-1, you know, Michigan State's at 7-4. Right now, like it's going to be hard for Michigan State to make up those three games, even with the way that Indiana's schedule picks up here coming up. I mean, now with that loss, it's a little bit more difficult for Indiana to get that, you know, top three, top four seed in the Big Ten tournament. And, you know, it's a loss that just looks out of place, or not even out of place on their resume. It just looks ugly on their resume. I mean, this is now a team that's lost to Penn State, Wake Forest, and UNLV at differing times of the season. And, you know, that UNLV team was playing a little bit better early in the season. Wake Forest was playing a little bit better early in the season. But it's this resume doesn't make sense to me in any way right now. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Indiana starts to play now, because Thursday and Sunday of next week, or I guess this coming week, they have Iowa and Michigan State.
Right.
You know, Iowa has to go to Bloomington. Michigan State has to go, or they go to Michigan State. I don't know how that's going to shake out for Indiana. If they get a split, I think they'll be happy, but I don't know what to expect either.
I think they need the split. And, you know, I wrote, it's not necessarily the loss that to Penn State that hurts. It's what comes after, because it just might start a little bit of a snowball effect here within the Big Ten standings and all that. I think if they do lose both the next two games, which are definitely losable, even though they've been ahead in the Big Ten standings for so long, I think their chances at a one seed go out the window. If they were to win those games, even with the bad losses, again, look at every other team that's going to be fighting for one seed and the losses they've taken and the loss totals, I think Indiana would have a shot. Certainly, if you win the Big Ten, they would be in it. But I think they've got a minimally split to keep that chance open. I do have doubts about that. I kind of feel like they might just hit a bump here and things might get a little bit interesting, though. Wichita State thing, you guys have both been here many times. You're like, you know what, this is a good story, I'm gonna write up on this. And so I do just a thing on Wichita State and how good it's been, and it's like it goes out and gets beat by Illinois State. Just give me one win. Like, give me one win after that. Lose one after that. But, you know, now with Wichita State, real quick here. So I'm of the opinion that they will it will still be in a good position if we were to run the table and not lose again until the Valley title game. If it loses one more regular season game and in the tournament, it probably gets a little bit interesting there. My question for the committee will be with Wichita State, remember – at the time that it defeated UNLV, UNLV was a 7-1 team with two really good wins on its resume. And let's see what UNLV becomes. So that Vegas win, it could go either way to helping them or hurting them. And obviously Van Vliet wasn't in the lineup for the 3-game losing streak down in Orlando. But I still maintain that Wichita State is in an okay spot right now. Obviously doesn't want to flirt with fire. And I would guess that this – I'm going to say right now, I don't think they'll lose again in the league, just because their toughest road games have been behind them. The rest of the time they play on the road is to teams that they should be beating by double-digit points, and really they've only had two games in the Valley that haven't been decided by a double-digit margin. Obviously, all those games that were are games that they won.
I don't think they're going to lose again before Selection Sunday.
I would totally buy that. Yeah. Absolutely. They've just been so dominant. Now, Illinois State, and by the way, Muller, like, I think he's going to have a really good job at some point down the road. It might take a couple more years here. He's a really good coach, and that they, you know, sometimes programs within these leagues, there's just schemes and player personnel. They're bad matchups. And clearly what Muller does, he faces up really well with Wichita State, but I would definitely side with UTP. If I had to take one way or the other, I don't think they'll lose again till Selection Sunday. And if that's the case, their seeding is going to be really interesting.
Muller's name is one you'd probably hear if, you know, things didn't get turned around at Vanderbilt and they ended up making a change.
Sure, because he was an assistant there for a long time.
He was an assistant there under Kevin for a while. Did you see the student newspaper at Vanderbilt?
Actually,
like, wrote it's time to fire Kevin Stallings. Like, they did, like, a student newspaper, like, did the whole, like, front page big headline. Like, it's time for a coaching change. So, like,
oh, that thing has turned on him.
Yeah. I mean,
like, badly, it seems like.
Yeah. I thought this would be a year where he starts to string it together a little bit, you know, a couple of good seasons, get back to being, you know, relevant both in the SEC and on a national level. And, like, you know, this season has been a disappointment. Like, you could reasonably argue they're one of the more disappointing teams in America. Like, you know, they beat Texas A&M. Was it A&M they beat the other night? Yeah, they beat A&M. And then they followed up, like, you know, Ole Miss ain't bad at home, but, like, if you're trying to get going, that's one you got to go win, right?
And yeah, so, no, I've written this year already. They're the most disappointing team in America. This is a team that I thought was going to be able to come into the year and potentially be a top 15 team. I mean, they have three potential NBA players on that roster. Wade Baldwin is going to be a first round pick this draft. You know, Damian Jones has already said he's leaving, but he hasn't quite had the year that, you know, he probably would have liked. But still, he'll be drafted if he leaves this year. And then Luke Kornet's another guy that's 7 foot tall, can really shoot the ball and does a little bit defensively. That's interesting. And I mean, they have some shooters. They surround all of those guys with guys who can shoot the lights out. And this offense is currently 82nd in the country. I think that I told you guys before the season that, like, I probably would have said that Indiana would have been my best bet to be one of the top offenses in the country. And I think that that's basically held. Indiana is sitting at 23rd offensively in the country. So a little bit below that level. But Vanderbilt would have been one of my next choices to be, sure, like, one of the best offenses in the country, no doubt. And they're sitting at 82nd right now. Yeah. And KenPom's adjusted offensive efficiency rating. And that's not good enough. With the talent that this roster has, not only with Baldwin and Jones and Cornette, but with the shooters that they surround those guys with, you know, Matt Fisher-Davis, 46% from three. Jeff Roberson, 48% from three. Riley LaChance, 40% from three. Like, it's unacceptable to me that this team is what it is.
I'm with you, man. Like, when you have a pro big and shooters. Two pro bigs, shooters, and a competent point guard.
The pro point guard.
Yeah, how are you not good? Like, how are you not good offensively? Like, and it's not like Kevin is, like, lost, like, on, like, he's known in basketball circles as a good offensive coach. It really doesn't make any sense that they're not, not just better than they are, but, like, that they're not drastically better than what they are.
No, and I mean, here's the thing. Like, he keeps going to post-ups, like, constantly. They run more post-ups than any team in the SEC. I've looked this up. And, like, it doesn't make sense because Damian Jones isn't a post-big. He's a, you know, set-a-pick-and-roll-to-the-basket-big right now who can catch and finish. Like, Luke Cornette is a three-point shooting big who isn't really all that strong in the on the block right now. Like, the way they're running that offense doesn't make sense to me. And they go out. They have two pro bigs, and they go out and lose to a Mississippi team that doesn't have its big. Like, Sebastian Saiz isn't playing.
Right.
He's like a double-double-ish kind of big, and he's out right now due to injury. And you go out and lose to that team, it's pretty unacceptable to me.
Before we look ahead a little bit to Monday night's games and Tuesday night games, I think it's important to look back, because the biggest story in college basketball is one that actually happened since we recorded our last podcast, and that is Louisville self-imposing a postseason ban 22 games into this season, a reaction, of course, to an ongoing NCAA investigation into a scandal rooted in allegations that a former staff member, Andre McGee, was hiring a madam, a self-proclaimed madam, to provide prospects and players with strippers and escorts. And so Louisville has not gotten into the details of their investigation, but they have acknowledged wrongdoing and decided to ban this team from this postseason in an attempt, a pretty clear attempt, to try to get whatever punishment they're going to be dealing with behind them as soon as possible. I wrote a column for CBSSports.com basically saying, like, listen, I get it. Like, when Dr. James Ramsey says this is what's best for our university and for our program, I don't disagree. But I think it is fundamentally wrong to rip a season away from players who have no real options at this point, particularly fifth-year transfers like Damian Lee and Trey Lewis. The idea that these two kids, just those specific two people, could transfer into Louisville well before the scandal news of it ever broke, and transfer to Louisville primarily because, yeah, they want to play in the ACC and for a Hall of Fame coach and all that stuff, but also because they want to go to the NCAA tournament at Cleveland State and Drexel. They never had that opportunity. And now they're on their way to doing it. Like, they were just coming off a win over North Carolina. They were projected by most people to be a 3 seed or a 4 seed. Could probably still get in play for a 2 seed. And then it's ripped away. Like, I don't know how adults can do that. And I don't know that they should be allowed to do that. The solution I proposed is, once the semester starts and kids are locked into the rosters, no more postseason bans for that particular season. And if you want, you know, the next year, that's open. But at that point, then the seniors will be gone anyway. And if you're an underclassman, you are given a waiver to transfer if you want to exercise it and play immediately somewhere else. And that would really, punish the programs and the men in charge of the programs and the universities, as opposed to punish student athletes who, in most cases, and definitely in this case, had nothing to do with the violations that actually occurred. Am I missing something? One of you want to play devil's advocate? One of you want to try to explain why Louisville doing this is okay and not, as I put it, shameful?
That's all Matt, because I'm not playing devil's advocate on this. I mean, we in our Slack room, I basically said the same exact thing that Gary did. I mean, no self-imposed bans, and anyone with eligibility remaining gets a transfer waiver. It's it's not a perfect scenario by any means. I mean, you still have kids that are going to have to uproot their lives and, you know, move from a university that they decided to commit their next 4 years to, both academically and athletically. And, you know, it's not perfect that you are giving these kids this option to do that. But I think that it's better to give them the options than to what the alternative is, with these kids now not being able to play in the NCAA tournament.
Okay, so I got a few thoughts on this. One, the argument that – this is kind of a fringe argument, but I did see Dan Dockers tweet it, and honestly, it's a ridiculous opinion. But the idea that this is somehow –
Is that the fired Bowling Green coach?
It is. Oh, The guy that coached 10 years
– let me make sure we're talking about the same guy. The guy who coached 10 years at Bowling Green, never made the NCAA tournament, then got hired at Indiana – once his head coach got fired, took a top 10 team, ran it straight into the ground?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I got you. I know who you're talking about.
And, you know, he is a national commentator, and so his opinion can carry a certain amount of weight. And he wasn't the only one to say this, by the way. But the idea that this is karma coming back to Lee and Lewis for leaving their schools, hey, they fulfilled their academic obligation, graduated at small schools, and have every right to pursue one more year at a big time power and try and reach an NCAA tournament. So that's not, there's karma has got nothing to do with this.
And let me add on that. First, yeah, it's a hideous opinion. It's a dumb opinion. I don't know whether he meant it or not. Sometimes people just tweet things and say things.
But I saw a lot of people, I saw plenty of people say.
Oh no, I had other people say it to me, like, they bailed on their schools. No, they didn't bail on their schools. First off, schools bail on players all the time.
Without a doubt.
Schools bail on coaches all the time. Coaches bail on schools all the time. We're not going to hold amateur athletes to a standard that we don't hold anybody else to. Their scholarships are 1 year at a time. So don't talk about that. They didn't do anything that they aren't allowed to do. And trust me, if their coaches at Drexel and Cleveland State had decided that they needed their scholarships to give it to a better player at any point in time, because this happens everywhere all over the country, then that would have happened. That would have happened to them. They kids get bailed on just as often as kids bail on universities. And either way, they didn't bail on anybody. They graduated and then they exercised. I don't want to say rights because that's not the right word, but they exercised an option that they're allowed to exercise. Mm-hmm. So that's insane.
Absolutely. And
the other thing I heard was, okay, this is what, because I got this one from a few people. Well, they should have known that they might be at risk of something playing for a, quote, guy like Rick Pitino. Okay, first off, Rick Pitino, and you'll remember because we talked about this in the podcast literally the week before this scandal broke, he's never had any NCAA issues. None. The idea that a kid at Drexel and a kid at Cleveland State should be worried about going to Louisville because of a possible postseason ban rooted in a scandal that nobody even knew existed at the time is just asinine. Like, what are you even talking about? So, no, like, you could twist it and turn it and try to have your, contrary opinion if you want to. But anybody trying to blame Damian Lee and Trey Lewis or suggest that they got what was coming to them, like, that's just stupid. Bordering on it's just stupid.
Yeah,
it's a stupid and wrong opinion.
It's crazy to me to even come up with that. Like you said, like, you know, what about the kid from BYU last year, Isaac Nielsen, who, like, kind of had his scholarship, like, not renewed or whatever. Like, he was run off or whatever. He was asked to transfer, basically. Like, you know, like you said, schools do this to kids all the time. There's no reason why. There's no reason why good players should be held to a higher standard than, like, other players off from programs.
No, beyond that, I'll make it even simpler for you. Like, if Dockage would have ever been any good at coaching basketball, like he would have had an opportunity. I know he had the West Virginia thing, but then turned back around. But if he would have ever had a better opportunity from Bowling Green, one that he, after looking at it from every angle, he decided, you know what, this is a better coaching opportunity for me. This is the way I want to spend the next year of my life. What would he have done? Bailed on his players? Like every other coach in America does? You know, like Brad Stevens? Everybody likes Brad Stevens, right? I mean, according to the definition that we're using here about Damian Lee and Trey Lewis bailing on their schools, did Brad Stevens bail on Butler?
Certainly. I mean, especially given the time of that, that came, honestly, it came right before the summer evaluation period. I mean, there is a few other times during the calendar year where it's more inconvenient to lose your coach.
Right. So what are you even talking about? Like, yeah. Bail on. Like, they graduated and found a better opportunity for them, one that they'd rather have. It's something 40 different coaches do every single year.
All right. So that was supposed to be.
I'm not going to attack Dokic by any means, who I think is good at his job analyzing basketball on television. That opinion is pretty bad, though.
So, okay. And so aside from that, and I will say with Lewis and Lee, it is, I hope they're realizing that so many people are like just standing up for them, and it's got to totally just suck so much to have this taken away because you're heading to the tournament and all that stuff. But the one upshot from that is everyone is coming to their defense and tossing a lot of sympathy their way, which, you know, doesn't amount to that much, but at least it is something. Now, in terms of the punishment and all that stuff, GP, I'm with you. I have doubts that this is going to happen in terms of not having a postseason ban self-implemented once a season starts. I think it should be the way we go. But the rules put forth by the NCAA are voted on by membership within the NCAA, and I have skepticism over whether school presidents and policymakers are going to say, yeah, no, we're going to be cool with that. Now, it should be that way. You should not be able to basically help dictate your own punishment. And it is interesting to see, like, way before we even started our jobs, back in the 70s and 80s and in the early 90s, how things used to work. And the NCAA is growing and evolving. And rightfully, I feel like public backlash and just common sense sentiment has really moved a lot of what the NCAA does to a logistical place. But obviously there are huge stories within college basketball and college football, most notably on a year-by-year basis, that show us that there's still room and pace to grow here. I don't know if there's a system that can be put into place that will stop this, but it should be stopped. You should not have the ability to say, no, you know what, we're just throwing away this year. Because you do it, obviously, to save the future, save the recruiting class. I mean, this clearly means Pitino has no set. Now, he might listen. Pitino is among the most notorious of being able to change his mind and his opinion on something. Well, he says it at 9 a.m. and it's, you know, 180 degrees by 3 p.m. So he could step down. He could resign at the end of the year. That there might even already be plans in place for this that is just so super hush hush right now. They don't want to even bring it to the table. But a lot of these moves to me suggest that Pitino is not ready. He does not want to step away from this school in the midst of this. Kind of similar to what, yes, Boeheim last year, when that team was nowhere near the NCAA tournament, and we, you know, mocked the school for doing that in what was an inconsequential season. It's been interesting to see the similarities and differences in terms of how everyone has reacted to what Louisville did versus what Syracuse did. I'll also say that the interesting part to me here is that basically, if you listen to the press conference, the president said, and Jurich, the AD, said, we got information a couple of days ago, and we're not going to share that information with you. But the information they got from the NCAA was so bad that in an 18-4 season, without – and I really get the impression that Pitino does not want to have this ban, by the way. I really think he fought them on this, and he can't help himself, and he kind of let a few of those cards, so to speak, kind of slip in his press conference. But it was so bad that they were like, no, we're done. We're going to do it this way. We don't even want to chance it. We don't want to chance a vacated season down the road or whatever.
Well, see,
but
that's the part I don't understand. What is the vacated season? There's nothing that can happen. Like, there is no vacate.
I know.
Some guy say he sent me a Facebook message. He said, Parrish, what you don't understand is that Louisville had to ban themselves from this postseason. Because if they don't, they're at risk of vacating their national championship. No, that one's got nothing to do with the other.
Who cares?
Everybody would care if you had to vacate a national championship. But like,
it still happened. Like, no, the national championship happened. We know who won.
Ask Michigan if they like vacating Final Fours, and Memphis if they like vacating Veterans. Nobody likes to vacate. My point
Nobody
is
likes
this:
to do it, but you, like, it. We know who won.
Well, my point is this: like, if Louisville has to vacate the 2013 title or not is going to be determined by things that happened with players on that roster. There is no scenario where this scandal is going to cause them to vacate the 2016 season. It's just, that ain't going to happen. It doesn't even add, the timeline doesn't add up. The only reason Louisville has decided to do this is because if you're going to have one postseason ban, now it's behind you, and you can go into the summer of 2016 telling recruits, no, you'll never have to miss the NCAA tournament. That's behind us. If it's going to be a two-year postseason
that's
ban.
That's what I was getting at.
If, yeah. if it's going to be a two-year postseason ban, then, yeah, you can tell your kids that are already signed with you, yeah, you're not going to be able to play as a freshman, but you will as a sophomore, junior, senior, and you can recruit the class of 2017 in a way that, where you can tell them you'll never have to miss the NCAA tournament. So the only reason Louisville does this is because it puts the punishment I think this is the way I wrote it. The earlier you start the punishment, the earlier it ends, right? And so, like, in the spirit of like trying to do the best long term thing for your program, this is what you ought to do. This is why Syracuse did what it did. The only difference here being Syracuse basically banned its NIT team from the NIT. That's what they did. And Louisville undeniably took an NCAA team out of the NCAA tournament, and they screwed over two fifth-year seniors who came there strictly to play in the NCAA tournament. And your larger point, Matt, which is you don't think my proposal would ever go through? I agree completely it wouldn't go through, because for it to go through would mean that the power brokers are decided they're going to do what's best for the student-athletes.
I just can't see it.
Like, not what's best for the universities and the athletic departments. And so, no, it runs counter to everything else they do. Almost everything they do is to do what's best for the universities and programs, not the student-athletes. If it also happens to be a positive for the student-athletes, then that's good. But, like, that's not the priority. My proposal, the priority would be the student-athletes, and that runs counter to what they usually do.
I got a couple more quick ones I want to hit on this thing. So, I'm not putting out of the equation that another postseason ban could be coming, because I think that is possible. Two, man, oh man, everyone is just dying for the NCAA to just boot North Carolina out of the universe. You cannot write or talk about this without everyone else coming in and saying, but what's happening at North Carolina? I assure you, there is going to be a massive hammer that comes down. We just have to wait for that to happen.
It's so frustrating. I get it all the time, too. Hey, well, what's going on with North Carolina? Google it. Google what's going on with North Carolina. It ain't hard to find out. Why are you?
Exactly.
Like, if you care so much about North Carolina, here's where I'm at this point. If you are so consumed with what's going to happen with North Carolina, you should be smart enough to know that North Carolina hasn't even gone before the Committee on Infractions yet. That it's coming. It's coming this year.
Yes,
presumably.
It will happen this year.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it should happen this year, but it ain't happened yet. Like, people want North Carolina to be punished before. Like, here's the. Oh, wait, you ready? This is actually perfect. North Carolina could already have done a postseason ban if they wanted to.
You know what
North Carolina said? Nah, we're going to ride this thing out, try to win a national championship in 2016. And though I think it's calculated on their part, like, I think they pushed back things. They, like, delayed the schedule so to ensure they would never be banned from the 2016 NCAA tournament. Like, they just decided, even if it's not good for us long term, we're gonna take a shot at this because we got a championship level team right now. Whereas Louisville basically did the opposite.
Plus, the timeline ends in terms of the NCAA's investigation with Carolina earlier. Like, the Louisville thing kind of bleeds into early 2014. Okay, Carolina's a little so basically, there's no one on this Carolina team that we know of that could be tied to the NCAA's investigation. So if any sort of vacation happened, it almost definitely wouldn't affect this season's team, in my opinion. Last thing on the Louisville thing, Pitino had mentioned, and this kind of fascinated me. He had mentioned how, you know, the students don't deserve to be punished. Let's punish programs and coaches. Two things, actually, real quick. One, again, because of the structure of the NCAA and the nature of student athletes coming and going and the nature of college coaches and rightfully having a free market to take jobs or whatever, there you can never, ever have a perfect punishment at the college level. It is just simply impossible. There is going to be shrapnel, and innocent bystanders are going to get the short end of the stick in one way or another. It is unavoidable. It sucks. It's just the nature of it. But I was intrigued by Pitino saying this when he basically knows that barring him being pushed out at Louisville, and I just don't buy – like, I think that whenever he decides to step down, it might come at a nudging, but I think that he is so powerful there that it will ultimately be, unless something like really brutal that's beyond his control comes out, it will ultimately be his doing. To me, it was interesting for him to say that, knowing full well that there's just nothing going to really be coming his way outside of the stain on his reputation.
Yeah, let's look.
We can move on. It's, to me, the story is fascinating, and it's a huge story, and it really sucks for Louisville, and there's a lot of layers to it, and I'm just glad we talked about it on the podcast, just because it sucks, honestly, and I just don't know what's going to happen to prevent this in the future with any other programs that want to cheat.
Louisville at Duke is on Monday night. The players have now said, and anytime something like this happens, it's not ideal. Like, you don't want your postseason aspirations, dreams, goals all ripped away, particularly this late in the calendar. But, once you get over the initial, disappointment, then you try to find something else to grab onto. And they're now saying our goal is to win the ACC regular season title. I don't know that they have to win at Duke to do that, but winning at Duke would really put them in a good position to do it. It's not far-fetched to think that they could actually do it. Sam, do they win at Duke on Monday night?
I will say that they do. I think that Louisville's defense can kind of shut down two guys, and that's what Duke has right now, and Brandon Ingram and Grayson Allen. And Duke's defense has just been such a nightmare this year that I don't think they're going to be able to slow down the guys like Damian Lee, Trey Lewis, Donovan Mitchell. I mean, these are all really good athletes that I think are going to be able to get out in transition and really take advantage of what has been a really bad Duke defense this year. So I say they do go into Duke and win, actually.
Norlander, can you see that? I just never assume anybody's going to win at Duke, even when Duke is struggling and even when the team's better.
Yeah, that's tough. Listen, Louisville, all that scandal stuff aside, as a team, I was definitely wrong on how I thought they would be nearly this good. And at now 19-4, actually. I don't think they're going to win at Duke, just because it is so tough to win at Duke. They still got a decent offense, right? And Krzyzewski's back.
Two teams have done it in the last, three weeks.
I know, right? I mean, there's reason to believe, but it's just – I'll say no, but I think it'll be a good game. And I do actually expect Louisville to play – I think the fan base, apparently, for a crappy BC game, reports were that the arena, the Yum Center, was, filled 30 minutes before tip, and BC's awful. And I think that the fan base will rally around it, and I think that the team, now that, they might have this genuine, F you to the world kind of mentality, even though there's no postseason carrot hanging for them, they could play some really inspired basketball. But I'll say they come up just short. And by the way, it is an important game for Duke overall, because, Palm had them as a seven seed entering Saturday. Well, they ended up beating North Carolina State, but if they lose, Duke then gets Virginia at home. That's going to be a tough one. Then at UNC, then a return at Louisville. We're going to hit this on future podcasts, especially if Duke takes on some losses, but we could have this weird thing. We talked about Kentucky with this year, but also 2 years ago, Duke might end up in the 8-9 game, and that just looks weird, and it would be compelling for if they were to win, and you get Duke in a underdog situation.
Could get Duke and Kentucky playing one seeds in the round of 32.
It's conceivable. So just keep an eye on that, because the defense on this team has been really weird.
The other game.
Well, seriously, can we go to Duke real quick? It's not crazy that they lose all four of these games.
No, it's not.
And if they lose all four of these games, you're talking about a team that is 17-10. That doesn't have a ton of quality wins necessarily. I think they have two top 50 wins, maybe one. Gary might know better than I do on that. And then they'd only have two opportunities left before the ACC tournament to get another one. If they lose these four games, they're in trouble to make the tournament, I think.
Right now, Duke has one top 50 win, a VCU.
No, they have two. Well, maybe RPI not. KenPom, they have two. They've beaten Indiana, and they had VCU earlier in the year.
RPI, it's just one, because Indiana is now 55th in the RPI. And I know these are – I just use the RPI as a grouping.
Yeah, because that's what the committee looks
like. Yeah, and that's what the committee uses. So, I recognize for anybody getting ready to tweet me that the RPI is a flawed number. I understand. But it is the one they use, and so it's at least worth looking at. So according to the RPI right now, Duke has one top 50 win. The good thing about Duke, to the extent that this is good, they only have one loss outside of the top 50, whereas Kentucky has five. outside of the top 50 of the RPI losses. Duke only has one, but there's not a whole lot there. And yeah, when you start looking at what they've got on board, again, Louisville at home, Virginia at home, at North Carolina, at Louisville. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're I'll put it this way. I would say the home games are winnable. Like, you can win those, of course, but they're also losable, like easily losable. And the road games are probably losses, right?
I would guess that they get one of these games. Like, I think that they probably get one of these
games. If you were picking right now, would you say next four games, 1-3?
I say 2-2.
I would say
1-3. I'll say 2-2.
I would say 1-3.
And that, which is, by the way, 1-3 is the better way to go, because the next four opponents, they're ranked 7th or higher in KenPom. So it's just a it's a gauntlet.
Yeah, I would say 1-3. If 1-3, which is just sort of weird. You never think that Duke's going to go 1-3 in a four-game stretch. The other game on Monday night of interest is, of course, Texas at Oklahoma. It'll be interesting to see how Oklahoma bounces back after losing at Kansas State. And Shaka's got Texas really playing well right now. I suspect that when the AP poll comes out on Monday, they'll be in it. They've got a top 25 resume right now. And then Tuesday night, this is interesting, and we'll wrap up with this, West Virginia at Kansas. West Virginia won the first meeting by 11. That, of course, was at West Virginia. If the Mountaineers win Tuesday night, by the way, they're alone at the top of the Big 12 standings right now.
Yes.
Mountaineers win at Allen Fieldhouse.
It's over. I'm saying it's over, GP.
They will have a two-game lead over Kansas in the Big 12 standings with just 7 games left.
Kansas will not win the Big 12 if they lose at home to West Virginia.
I think that's probably true.
It's not going to happen. The league's too good, and West Virginia is going to have too good of a lead. And with, you know, there was some glimmer of hope for Kansas, the fact that Oklahoma lost. I think Oklahoma, listen, Texas looks really good. And credit to Shaka, that team is doing so well. I think Oklahoma is going to bounce back and just rock Texas on Monday night, personally. That's just a guess.
By the way, we're probably going to know about the streak, like, by the end of this weekend. Like, we're going to feel reasonably good about it, because they play West Virginia and Oklahoma this week, Kansas. So, I mean, if they drop, you know, one of those games, it's probably fine. If they win both, I would say that they are going to win the Big 12. So
I don't think I'll count them out until they are mathematically eliminated.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Neither will I. Yeah,
but I tend to believe. Just like, listen, we're guessing. I told you if I had to guess Duke's next four games, I'd guess 1-3. Another guess. I think Norland and I are on the same page. If Kansas loses Tuesday night to West Virginia at Allen Fieldhouse, I don't think Kansas will win the Big 12.
But for some perspective, since basically February, like 6th or 7th, 2007, somewhere around there, think back to how long ago that was, okay? Sam was just entering the fourth grade, okay? Kansas has lost 3 home games in that time. They just never get beat. It's just insane.
I don't think they're going to lose at home to West Virginia, because I don't think they're ever going to lose at home to anybody ever. Like, the Warriors could play there and I'd still have to think about it, you know. I know they got Steph and Clay and Draymond, but it's still Allen Fieldhouse, right? So, like, I don't expect them to lose Tuesday night, but if they do, they got serious.
Hold on, real quick, that's a fun little thing though. Like, if that actually happened, Vegas probably puts Golden State minus 29.
Dude, I think Golden State is minus 29 against anybody at this point.
That's a fair point. Like, legitimately, what would that line be? Golden State at Allen Fieldhouse. Yeah, honestly, maybe it's minus 45.
they're unbelievable.
It's like 40, easy.
I mean,
dude, I just can't. I mean, listen, that team is ridiculous.
The team is really ridiculous. Like, I watch every one of their games. Like, it is unbelievable.
I couldn't even believe that Oklahoma State came back. And when they did, I had, like, sometimes you'll watch games, and a lot of these college games, especially in college football, you're like, yeah, well, even if it's close, you're like, oh, whatever. Like, I had no confidence whatsoever that Oklahoma State had any chance to win that game, even when Durant was going kind of nuts late. Like,
Oklahoma City, Norlander.
What did I say? Oklahoma State?
Twice. You said Oklahoma State.
I can feel reasonably sure Oklahoma State would not be able to beat them either.
Yeah, especially not with Phil Forte out.
The homie.
I wish the homie Phil Forte would play.
All right, good deal. You want to go prep for the Super Bowl, guys?
Yeah. If we didn't make it clear at the beginning, we got this out of the way before pre-Super Bowl. So that we could enjoy the Super Bowl like normal Americans. And so,
can we get the prediction, the score, just so it can be on the record here?
Peyton 6-3.
Peyton 6-3.
6-3, Peyton Manning.
The game is not ending 6-3, GP.
I hope it does. That's the way I want it to go. I want Peyton to win.
So I'm actually, I do. I don't know why, but I'm also rooting for Peyton. My score is 27-23 Broncos, though.
Sam. I'm going to say 27-14 Carolina.
Oh, boo you, Sam.
And
boo.
GP says 6-3.
6-3.
Would
it be awesome if it were 6-3? I don't care about the game.
It'd be a quick Super Bowl.
I want to watch Beyonce.
I will be honest with these things here, and we really should wrap up. But Twitter, which we have for our jobs, we use, like, Twitter will never be more on fire unless there's like a 2-minute drive to win the game than the freaking halftime Super Bowl and everyone wanting to tweet about Beyonce and Coldplay, which will bring funny jokes, I'm sure. But shout out to Parachutes and A Rush of Blood to the Head, because Coldplay's first two records are still really good. I don't care what the haters say.
Also, shout out to the Left Shark.
Okay.
We'll do it. Hey, on your music podcast, Norland, you got to have me on to discuss Coldplay sometime.
Well, don't worry. I got you rostered in, I think, for season 3. But I don't know. Is Coldplay the band you want to be talking about?
I can't stand them.
Okay. Well, you know what? We'll have to hash it out here. I understand a lot of the criticism is very valid, but the first two records are genuinely like really good. They are very, very good, and then it took a bad turn there.
And how did you get yourself locked in if you're Coldplay to having to share a stage with Beyonce?
I don't even know how this happened. Okay, I couldn't tell you.
I mean, the problem is that everyone probably would have left their TV.
Like,
once
she makes
Coldplay came on.
The problem becomes she makes, like, she overshadows Jay-Z. You know what I'm saying? Like, she is such, like, you, that's like the one person on the planet you can't get on a stage with. Am I right?
Yeah, no, you who, definitely, there's,
who,
yes.
Who completely overwhelms,
I don't know. What's
anybody.
Funny is people are going to be listening to this podcast after this, all this
I know,
has
right?
happened. So, like, I don't know what to expect here. I have no idea how you're going to incorporate Beyonce into a Coldplay set. I don't know. And Chris Martin, hate Coldplay or not, he's not a brutal front man. Like, he knows what he's doing up there to a certain degree. But yeah, I don't see how this possibly works. So just hope for something of a train wreck. Absolutely.
It's like getting into a dunk contest with Zach LaVine. Like, why do you even want to get involved in that? That's what Coldplay's doing. They just got into a dunk contest with Zach LaVine.
Listen, the Ion College Basketball Podcast is the only place where you can go to where you can get comparisons of Beyonce to Zach LaVine. You're not getting that anywhere else.
If they called me and they said, GP, we'd like your band to play the Super Bowl, I'd be like, cool, that's an honor. I appreciate that. And they'd say, we're going to put Beyonce up there with you. I'd say, we're not getting involved in that.
Like, especially, and you know why especially? Because they don't get paid for this. It's a free gig. And you do it for the publicity alone. Just like Coldplay and Beyonce, they aren't making any money directly from the NFL office.
And so the way it ends, listen, we are recording this probably 3 and 4 hours before Beyonce and Coldplay get on stage. Here's the way it's going to go down, I would predict. People are going to be talking about how Coldplay didn't belong up there because Beyonce blew them off. They might not even be on the stage together, but for 30 seconds. I have no idea how this thing is going to go down. But like, you're just – people aren't going to be talking positively about you. Because they're going to be talking positively about Beyonce, and I don't care what Coldplay does. You can't compete with Beyonce.
I don't think it's going to be that bad. Like, it's not going to be – I don't think it's going to be great by any means, but, like, I don't think it's going to be a disaster. Like, I felt like Bruno Mars wasn't going to be very good in 48.
Bruno Mars was great.
And Bruno Mars was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he was one of the better ones I've seen.
Yes, and because and definitely Bruno was terrific, but the expectation level was so low for Bruno that he went above it.
That's kind of what it is for Coldplay too.
No, I guess, but you can't. But then when you add Beyonce to the mix,
no, here's the problem. Let me make this clear for you. It's like if you had a 48-inch TV hanging on your wall, is it's just there by itself? You go, hey, that's a nice TV. It's fine. You're not looking at anything else. You're just looking at your 48-inch TV. But then somebody throws an 80-inch TV on the wall right next to it, you can't even look at the 48-inch TV anymore. You think it's the worst TV in the world. That's what just happened to Coldplay when they threw Beyonce into this thing. Man. Coldplay by itself might be okay. I doubt it because I don't like them, but like maybe. But they just got put on stage with an 80-inch television named Zach LaVine.
These analogies
I would
are
watch
ridiculous, and yet they make for us.
All right, I got to go. I got to go Let's cook go. Something. I'm going to go cook something. So if you want to subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast, you can do that on iTunes. If you don't want to, I don't care. Goodbye. We'll talk to you later on in a week.